It's Physical Therapy Day on WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and thank you for joining us. Today we're talking about the health issues that come from spending too much time sitting. How much is too much? I think you may know, as do I. Here to share their insights and advice, physical therapists Jill Tyne Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne Brody. Jill's a professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So what physical therapy questions do you have for our guests, and how can they help you with their aches and pains or getting up and moving and staying active? Join our conversation at any time by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Jill and Lori, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Another lovely day in Wisconsin.
Days like these are not the easiest to get up and get active.
I just sort of
want to burrow in
under
a blanket and call it a day, even though it's still not even noon.
Right,
exactly.
I had a lot of that going on this weekend, but I made myself get up and go out. It's hard.
It's really hard. I had a friend that called and wanted to do a hike, and that helped tremendously because the buddy system works really well for me.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Have a buddy, somebody to get you up out of the couch
and on your way.
And have that commitment.
Let's go do something.
Yes, exactly.
You know, that's one of the benefits of group exercise classes, you know.
Peer pressure.
Well, they hold you accountable. You know, you come back the next time and people ask, where were you last week?
But it's also more fun than going solo, right?
It can be if you're a group kind of a person.
Right. For a lot of people, group exercise is a great way. There are other people who, if their jobs require them to be social and on all day long.
Yeah. Why are you looking at me?
They prefer to put on their headphones and go to the gym, and that is their quiet time, their sacred time. And they prefer it that way. So I think, as Lori always says, you have to know thyself and know what works for you in order to be compliant.
Right. But one thing we do know is that if you're sedentary, you are at higher risk of neck pain.
Right.
We are actually at higher risk of many things. But today we're talking specifically about a study that looked at the relationship between sedentary behavior and neck pain.
This is a meta study. Last time you two were on, you had a meta study and you had some questions about it, cobbling it all together. The meta study is a study of studies, a bigger study, a big picture of what's happening in our health.
And anytime you do a meta analysis, you're doing exactly what you said, is you're taking all these papers that have looked at it. And what it can do is it can kind of muddy the water because the population isn't as pure, how they define sedentary behavior might not have been as pure. How they define neck pain may not have been as perfect. But because the number is so high, that gives us good statistical power. So I think you really have to consider everything.
Right. So, you take the bad and the good all together and you make a judgment about it.
Mm-hmm. How high is it?
How high is what?
When we're talking about the connection between sedentary behavior and neck pain.
Mm-hmm. So this was a study. They combined 25 studies with 43,000 subjects, and they found a significant relationship between sedentary behavior and neck pain. And then they looked at some subgroup analysis, and they found that it was greater in women than in men, and greater in employees than in students. But that may be partly because of who they included in their employee group, and it was a lot of people working in factories or people, particularly women, working at sewing machines. Mm-hmm. So China was one of the areas where they looked at studies there.
The other thing I think you need to think about with employees versus students is their ability to take breaks. Mm-hmm. Because if you are an employee, as you talked about, especially on an assembly line or something, there's no opportunity for you to get up and move around as much as students may. Or students may go in and out of their screens a little bit more, things like that.
I also think of age as a difference between students and employees.
Right. True. Right. And the other thing to think about with employees beyond the ability to take a break is they often feel like, oh, I'm active all day long. Like I'm working on the factory, right. I'm moving, I'm doing this work. And so when I go home, I want to rest. I want to sit and look at my phone.
I want to be sedentary.
At my computer. I want to be sedentary. And that repetitive work of doing the same thing over and over all day is not the same.
Right. So what constitutes sedentary behavior? At what point being sitting, doing nothing, does it begin to negatively impact your physical health?
Well, they defined sedentary behavior here using the metabolic equivalent of 1.5 or less than 1.5, which is basically sitting and doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like just sitting and doing absolutely nothing.
Like I'm doing now.
Correct. Like,
exactly.
Like the three of us are doing now, and that's
exactly.
Why when we go to break, we're all going to stand up and do squats.
And we're going to do some squats. So in another subgroup analysis, they found that mobile phones created the greatest risk of neck pain with an odds ratio of 1.82.
Well, now, that stop there, because that just makes sense, right? We don't look up to our phones. We look down to our phones. Mm-hmm. It makes us kind of crawl into ourselves. Our neck goes down.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Would we be better served by looking up at our phones, by holding our, like when my dad doesn't have his glasses on, holding his phone at arm length and looking up?
Well, having any variety and change in your posture is going to be good. Whether looking up is an improvement over looking down, I can't say, because it depends upon, is it, you know, are you tipping your head? Are you extending your neck? There's a lot of variables, but in general, changing your posture more often is going to be better.
Static in any position is not good, regardless of the position.
Right. Your body doesn't like static. Nothing in your body.
But many
likes
of us
static.
Are paid to actually sit for 8 hours a day in front of a computer or other devices to make the machines work and make sure that the money comes in and goes out.
Yeah, correct.
So what can I do about that if that is my actual job?
Well, you're going to have to get up now and again. So you can set your watch to chime every 15 minutes and get up and do 5 squats. Sit back down or stretch your back or whatever.
Okay.
And,
so.
And if you have an opportunity to utilize a standing desk or a small treadmill or something like that to change your position, that is another option. So in the physical therapy program, as you can imagine, almost everybody has either a desk that goes up and down and or a little non-motorized treadmill under their desk. And so people can walk and things like that while they're working.
Should you be standing 8 hours a day?
I don't think you should be doing the same thing
okay.
for 8 hours a day, whether it's standing or sitting. Your body does not like to be static. And actually, it's interesting you say that because some of the, I think, most difficult jobs are those that have a static standing posture. So you think about an assembly line worker, the cashier at the grocery store, things like that. Those are really difficult jobs to do. And they always give them those or try to give them those foam pads that you can stand on. But it's still very hard on your joints.
Yeah.
Spoke to a delivery driver on Friday who was dropping another box off at the house. And, you know, one of the things he said to me is, I like that I just get to keep moving.
Yes.
And he says that's part of the best part of the job is that he's moving all day.
Absolutely. Yep.
Same with being a physical therapist.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're moving all day.
You know, if I had to sit all day, I would lose my mind.
Correct. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I think you migrate to those professions for that thing. But yeah, absolutely. Those, they sit for a little bit and then they jump out of their truck and they deliver something. They get to do some lifting with it, pet some dogs. You know, it's a good job.
Yeah. We talked about the cell phones. What do we know about sedentary behavior and computers or televisions?
So computers followed the cell phones for the greatest risk of neck pain, and there was no association between neck pain and sedentary behavior associated with watching television.
Well, now that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, when we had this conversation, and the question becomes kind of multifactorial. First of all, when you're watching television, the screen is probably farther away.
Okay.
So you may be moving your head more. You might be multitasking. You might be doing some crocheting or doing some other activity. And the other thing is, I'm dating myself, but do you remember when there used to be commercials? And you'd get up every time there was a commercial and go, do put some dishes away or something like that. And so television may lend itself to More interaction with other people watching the same item on television.
Sure.
They're farther away.
Right. I think the farther away thing is a big thing because you're more likely to change your posture
right.
more often than if you're sitting right next to your computer. And because you have that space in front of you, it's easier to say, oh, I'm going to pause this right now. I'm going to get up and I'm mm-hmm. going to go get, you know, a glass of water or mm-hmm. whatever it is. So I think not having that screen directly in front of you, that's a bit of a barrier mm-hmm. to get up, I think mm-hmm. makes a difference.
Agreed.
The meta study says about 70% of people worldwide experience some sort of neck pain at mm-hmm. least once in their lifetime, and that risk is on the rise.
Yes.
Would you like to speculate as to why it's going up?
Well, because sedentary behavior is going up mm-hmm. because of computer use, because of phones, because of increased screen time for sure. We know that 80% of the population will experience an episode of low back pain within their lifetime.
Just 80.
Mm-hmm. Just 80.
Seriously, that number sounds low to me.
Eight out of 10 people will have at least one episode. In other words, only 20% of the population yeah. gets through life without an episode of low back pain.
Shouldn't we talk to that 20% and find out what they're doing right?
Yeah, well, it may be that 20% just doesn't report it.
Seriously.
You know what I'm
saying? I mean, that number seems like it's anecdotal to me because I can feel my back pain any time
right,
of day.
Right, yeah. right. So I think neck pain is just kind of catching up to mm-hmm. low back pain because of now, you know, the thing called text neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. and mm-hmm. all of these things that we have with these devices, like Lori talked about, that are so close in front of our face.
So text neck is mm-hmm. a very real physical therapy
yep.
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What is
yeah.
the remedy to text neck?
Mm-hmm. Get off your phone.
Get off your phone. So, you know, and
Thank you, doctor.
I don't, let's not get into politics.
Right.
But,
yeah. yeah. Right.
But
that's not political. That's,
well, I was just thinking about taking phones out of schools.
Oh,
you know,
but that's right. physical therapy, though, that it's good for your physical health.
It is.
And some have said
right.
it's good
Thanks
for your mental health.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To put that phone mm-hmm. away and
right.
look someplace else.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I will say anecdotally, I have a daughter who's a junior in high school, and this was the first year that they did the mandatory cell phones away during class.
Mm-hmm.
She made friends. Like she
wow.
interacted with people, and the teacher said, "I can't believe how much more talking there is in the classroom."
Nice,
so
I love it.
So,
yeah.
You know, I still say she's on her phone quite a bit,
sure.
But it's not for such an extended period of time, which I think is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the frequent breaks, getting off of it, mm-hmm. stop looking at it, frequent breaks that really make a difference.
What did you refer to it as? Snacker size? What was it?
Oh, snacktivity.
Snacktivity.
And
yeah.
I didn't make that term up.
Yeah.
Snacktivity. That's a term that's been coming out in the literature that for people who say, oh my gosh, I cannot find 120 consecutive minutes to exercise, or I can't find whatever this
okay.
chunk of exercise. Instead, do it in small bites. So instead of thinking about, oh my gosh, I can't find 30 minutes to exercise, that's fine. Take 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 5 minutes there, and get that time in small bites or little snacks.
So snacktivity.
Snacktivity.
Mm-hmm. Snacktivity.
I tell you what, we have 45 seconds here to
okay.
do a little bit of snacktivity.
Great.
I think that you recommended some squats,
mm-hmm.
so we'll
squats.
Get out of our chairs. I'll
mm-hmm.
get away
mm-hmm.
from my computer and
mm-hmm.
my phone, and we'll do a few squats for 45 seconds.
Great.
All right.
In the meantime, we welcome you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. If you have physical therapy questions about what you can do about your neck or lower back pain, or if you are one of those 20% who say you don't have lower back pain, I'd love to hear from you. I'd be very curious about what you had to say and how you do it. Our guest, Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you are listening to WPR News. Just wrapping up our snacktivity with our guests, Lori Tyne-Brody and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. It's Physical Therapy Day on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and we're inviting you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at wpr.org. And Jill, I feel a little winded.
Yeah, well, you mm-hmm. got up and you did this quick bout of 30 quick squats with your arms in different positions. So it got your heart rate up. It got your blood flowing. Those are all really good things.
No, mm-hmm. You did as many squats as me, but mm-hmm. you're not nearly as winded.
Oh, I don't know. I do these on a somewhat regular basis, I guess. Yeah. I exercise pretty regularly. So we have to practice what we preach. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Now, for those with neck pain, you talk about prevention, but what sort of exercises or stretches can you do to deal with neck pain?
Hmm. Well, it depends upon the cause and what we find on an examination, which is why we would typically tell people to see a physical therapist, because not all neck pain is the same. All that being said, if the issue is related just to poor posture, then we talk about strengthening what are called the deep neck flexors with some specific exercises, some stretching for some of the anterior chest muscles, because people tend to round their shoulders. So we open up the chest. We strengthen some of the muscles in the back between the shoulder blades as a general rule.
Right. And if you're going to be one of those people that you referred to, Lee, that has to sit for 8 hours a day, the other thing we would do is we would do an ergonomic assessment to make sure that your setup in your workstation is appropriate. And we saw a lot of this with COVID when people all of a sudden had to go home and were working at their dining room tables.
Yep.
And so that was a big, we saw a big increase in back pain and neck pain from people not having a good work setup. One of the things that I think is really important, as Lori got to with the posture business, and it's sometimes hard to sell to people, but people with neck pain many times will benefit from a lumbar roll. So in other words, getting their base in a really good position will help. If your base is in a good upright posture, it's really hard to bring your head forward.
Huh.
Versus if you slouch, it's really easy to bring your head forward. So sometimes you have to start at the base and really get your core in a good position, your hips in a good position, and get in a nice stable spot. As you may have noticed, the first thing Lori and I did when we got in the studio today was adjust our chairs.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's important.
So ergonomics and physical therapy go hand in hand, then.
Mm-hmm. Very much. Very, very much. Yep.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
There's a whole cohort of individuals that work in occupational health as physical therapists and work in work environments, and they do kind of direct-to-employer type work.
I didn't even notice until you mentioned it. The first thing you do is adjust your chair, make sure that you're comfortable with your posture. Mm-hmm. And all right. 1-800-642-1234. We have some questions standing by for our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. And we'll start with Stu and Randolph. Stu, good morning.
Good morning, Lee. How are you guys doing today?
Great, thank you. We just did some snacktivity.
Yeah, I was listening to that. You did your squats and stuff and getting loosened up.
And out of breath.
Okay. And Larry will give you a hard time about that, I bet you.
Certainly. What do you have for us today, Stu?
No, I listen to you guys quite a bit, and I've got pain underneath my armpits and my rib cage, and sometimes it wraps around to the front. And I saw Dr. Rudin down at UW.
We know,
in January, and he's working with me, and he set me up with a physical therapist there. Then I transferred to the east side because it's closer, because I live north of town. So I've been doing these stretches and stuff since the middle of January, and I was wondering how long before this stuff starts to work. I don't feel a whole lot better.
So what did Dr. Rudin think was the cause of your symptoms?
Dr. Rudin, after looking at the MRIs, they're older ones, he sees a lot of arthritis. And my primary care, he always points to fibromyalgia, he thinks it is.
Oh, fibromyalgia on top of some.
Fibromyalgia is a diagnosis sort of exclusion. So sometimes when people have what we call myofascial pain, and that can come as a result of having arthritis in a lot of places, they like to label it as fibromyalgia. I myself am not particularly in love with labeling it as such. I like to look for the source of the symptoms. So you've been doing these things since January. It's now May, and you're not noticing a difference. I would hope that you're going back to the physical therapist to get your exercises retooled. So the idea would be that your exercises are progressive. And if whatever you're doing isn't helping you to get better, then we need to take a look again and see what's missing. Mm-hmm. Is there something we need to add? Is there something that we're doing that's perpetuating your symptoms, mm-hmm. something that needs to be taken away? Which is why you need that ongoing update. But I would expect if you are exercising regularly and being adherent with that rehabilitation program that you should be seeing some benefits.
Stu, where specifically is your arthritis? You were talking about stretching in your rib cage and things like that. Is it in your mid back or is it in your upper back, your lower back? Can you just offer that?
As she was saying, I do go every 2 weeks.
Okay, great.
Scott,
okay, good.
So we are updating stuff
good.
And changing. I was going every 2 weeks when I saw Dan downtown.
Oh, mm-hmm.
But Rudin, when he looks at it, he looks at all the different levels of the thoracic spine.
Yes.
And I can't see it, but he's pointing to these white areas or whatever he's diagnosing.
Right.
And so, he sees all this arthritis between the joints and the degenerative joints.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So the thoracic spine is somewhat difficult because there mm-hmm. are so many joints there, Stu, because of how your ribs come in and articulate back there. And so that's a really kind of challenging place because it's really hard to unload the thoracic mm-hmm. spine other than
in a pool.
Yeah. Oh. That'd be the best option. That's what I was thinking of mm-hmm. was unloading, but mm-hmm. plain old traction
wouldn't work. Yeah. Yeah, unloading those joints would be the key. It's really hard to get in a position where you can unload. So you can unload your knees by sitting. You can unload your hips by lying down. But your thoracic spine really gets loaded no matter what.
Right.
So a pool would be probably the one place where you could unweight and see if you could get some benefit from that.
Right.
Stu, I hope that helps, and thank you so much for the call. We'll go to Bill in Madison next. Bill, good morning. You're on with Lori and Jill.
Hi, I appreciate it. I'm a 64-year-old and still active in the gym, and I've recently identified something I can't do with my right arm that I can do with my left, and wonder if I've done some underlying injury there. So I can do chest press and shoulder press and long pulls and two-point rows. But if I hold my right elbow in against me, I cannot lift 5 pounds when my arm is extended straight out in front of me, I can lift 20 pounds with my left arm.
Long head of the biceps.
Oh, I missed what. Okay, sure.
So if your right elbow is at your side, you're talking about an elbow curl?
Like a bicep curl?
Just trying to lift the arm straight, and not exactly a curl in, but lift it up straight up in the air.
Oh, with your elbow bent, you mean lift your arm straight in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. You can do it with your elbow bent, but not with your elbow straight. Do I have that right?
Neither.
Okay. So time out. Is it just to the front, or is it also to the side, as if you're making an angel in the snow?
Haven't tried that, but I don't feel anything bad on the side.
When you do all these exercises, are you doing them with both arms at the same time? Or are you doing them in individual, like an individual dumbbell in each arm?
With the rows individually, but the presses all both arms.
Are you right or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Oh, so this is dominant arm.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. It sounded to me like a long head of the biceps issue.
It did to me at first, but now it doesn't as much. You don't, when you look at your arm, do you notice any visible atrophy, side to side difference when you look at your muscles in the mirror at all, Bill?
No.
So okay. When you flex your bicep, do they look the same side to side?
It seems like the left is larger.
So it could be a long head
of the biceps. Could be a long head of the biceps.
You could have done a long head of the biceps rupture.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt you to see a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. And with direct access in the state of Wisconsin, you can see a physical therapist without a referral. You'd have to check and make sure that your insurance allows that. But mm-hmm. You may have just tugged off the long head of your biceps, which is not a... It's not a crisis.
Is that a muscle tear?
It is, but they do surgery to actually resect it. So it's a common thing to have moved because it can actually be a big pain generator in your shoulder. But I'd be curious why somebody at 64 is pretty young to tear a long head of the biceps tendon, I think.
But I don't know.
Bill, you didn't mention any pain, did you?
No.
You don't. It happens without pain.
It happens without pain. Okay. I remember seeing a patient in the pool who came in and had bruising all over his upper arm. And I looked at him and I said, when did you rupture the long head of your biceps? He said, I don't know.
Right. Right. Yeah. I ruptured a patient's long head of their biceps tendon doing a resisted
oh,
little isometric
kidding.
In clinic. Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
It was fine. It was fine.
It was fine.
It was fine. It was fine.
So Bill, we think you should see a physical therapist and get a good exam and see what's what. So they'll do a bunch of different muscle tests and try your shoulder in different positions to figure out what exactly is going on.
And specifically because you're typically a little stronger in your dominant hand than you are in your non-dominant hand.
Right.
So the fact that you are weaker in that, it's not just a 20% difference. It's more like a 30% difference.
Right, exactly. So check that out. Let us know what
call
you
us
find,
back
okay?
Call us back. Let us know next month.
Bill, thank you so much for the call. We've got a couple people who want to talk about not having any back pain ever.
Oh, let's talk.
Bring it on, baby.
We'll start.
Bring it on.
With Helen in Manitowoc. Helen, good morning.
Good morning.
So you don't have any back pain, huh?
No, I don't now. But 20 years ago or more, I had some back pain tissue injury. And it would give me trouble every now and then. So I had a bone scan 6 years ago. Was diagnosed with osteopenia. But they told me exercise more, aerobic exercise, which I do regularly, and take more calcium, take more vitamin D. So I did that. 2 years later, I had another bone scan. Nothing had changed. A year ago, I had another bone scan. Nothing has changed. But I realized within the last couple of years, I don't have back pain anymore.
No. Wow. Well, there you have it.
So all that exercise helped your back pain. But the question is, it might not have been enough loading of the bones to increase her bone mineral density.
Well, we don't know how old Helen is. So at some point in life, not worsening is progress.
Right, exactly. So, that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
So,
Wow, Helen, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And so your secret would be not so secretive at all. It's exercise?
Exercise, yeah. And we do walking with YouTube videos, walking in the house back and forth, kicking, throwing your arms around, you know.
Oh, nice.
Following people. I do that at least 20 minutes a day. And if I can't have time to exercise, I stretch for at least 15.
Good for you. So you don't need to belong to a gym and do these things. You can do all these things in your house, which is great, which probably increases a lot of people's compliance.
Helen, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for sharing your experience. We'll go to Diane and Eau Claire next. Diane, good morning.
Hi. How's everybody?
Well, I got a little back pain.
Good for a Monday.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm 70, almost 77.
Wow.
And I've been a long-term walker, hiker all my life. I continue to do that. I've done Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, but as time has gone by, the one time in the day that I would have low back pain is on rising. So I would get up and I would have that discomfort in my low back on a daily basis. And as I would stretch and then just start getting through the day, it would always go away. But it wasn't until I started the Strong Bones or Strong Bodies program. And that's a national program. I'm sure you will talk about it. I hope you will. I never wake up with any back pain anymore. I don't have any back pain. And another thing is I used to, another chronic place holding pattern for me was in my upper thoracic area. I'm right-handed, and it was especially on the right side. And it would be, I would have burning, itching, you know, just discomfort. And there's an exercise within that program that I don't have that symptom at all anymore. And that was long years I had that.
Wow.
For years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The Strong Bodies program?
Yeah, Strong Bones.
Strong Bones.
It's a program for osteoporosis prevention.
Correct.
There are many places that host these classes for people who have osteoporosis or at risk of osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, in the category of back pain and exercise.
You're going to tell the story about our mother?
We would be remiss if we didn't tell the story of our mother, who has two children who are physical therapists and a son-in-law who's a physical therapist and had back pain most of her life. She was in a car accident as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I remember her laying on the couch with a heating pad until she was maybe 60, and her physician told her to go to the gym and lift weights. Mm-hmm. So being the good woman of German descent that she is, she marched off to the gym and started lifting weights. Of course, she was in pain for 2 weeks, and then she got religion. So she called us and said, you girls should be doing this. And Jill and I had to, like,
girls, this weightlifting is something else. You ought to give it a try.
Yeah, exactly. And she lifted weights almost until probably within
4 to 6 weeks of passing.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And she had no more back pain.
Correct.
Back pain was gone.
And she was legally blind late in life. And she would go and she would use the weight machines, and she would be able to, with her finger, count the number of plates she would go down and put the peg in, and she would still be lifting weights.
Yeah.
Over 80. She was 86, I think, when she passed.
Yeah.
Still at the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sounded a lot like your mother before she got religion, with the heating pad on the couch and thinking that that's going to solve the back pain.
Yeah. No. Nope.
We know that sedentary, being sedentary and bed rest is actually, for the 99% of back pain, is contraindicated. So, yep. Passive modalities.
But it's the easiest therapy.
It is the easiest thing. So taking some ownership, getting you moving the right way, that's really the role of a physical therapist, to help guide you through that. So you do know what's right for you versus someone else.
Strong Bones program, I just want to reiterate that again. And Diane, I want to thank you so much for sharing your experience with you and how you got rid of your back pain. Also, waking up with back pain is how much that has to do with how you sleep. You talked about ergonomics at work before. What about the ergonomics of the bedroom?
So this was before me. I think you and Bill were still doing this, and some mattress expert called and said that you should get a new mattress every 8 years. Is that correct? So I think a lot of people are probably sleeping on old mattresses. They don't flip their mattress. They don't rotate their mattress.
Not only that, but the mattress guy said when you get a new mattress, you are supposed to rotate it every month. For the first 6 months.
Okay, there you go. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So the ergonomics of sleeping are a big deal.
Yeah.
And so making sure the mattress is a good fit for you, firmness-wise, is a big deal. Body pillows are a huge thing. So the pregnancy pillow that they sell should be just the pillow. It should not just be marketed towards women who are expecting, because I have two.
Men could use it too.
I have two in my house.
Okay.
So, and they're great.
Right. I saw a woman not long ago who was, you know, having pain first thing in the morning, and I said, oh, you should think about getting a body pillow. She said, oh, like the pregnancy pillow I gave away? And I just thought, guess what? See if you can get it back.
Right. Because aligning your spine and your entire body is really important, especially if you're one of those persons who doesn't move much at night when they sleep. So then you're stuck in that position for a long time.
Right.
Is there a sleeping position that can do you harm?
The best position, as a general rule, is on your side.
On your side.
But having said that, depending on the curve of your hips and things like that, we want your spine in neutral. So you'd want a pillow that held your neck in neutral, so you aren't, it's not too fluffy because you bend away, or it's not too flat, you bend too close. And then this is where, with wide hips, having a pillow between your knees becomes really important. If you're really small waisted, some people will put a pillow roll on their waist as they're lying down to keep their spine in neutral. But the intent is to kind of keep your spine in a good alignment.
And the benefit of the body pillow is, well, like the ones that we have, you can bend it to put it between your knees or all different ways. But also it gives you alternate sleeping position. So instead of being back, front, side, you have these 45 degree angles that we call front side lying and back side lying.
Jill, you mentioned you have two pillows. Are you using them both at once? Do you recycle them out?
So my teenage daughter had a surgery, an upper body surgery. And so she took mine.
Okay.
When she had the surgery.
So you only need one.
And I never got it back. Okay. Because she realizes yeah. it's just a really nice right. benefit to have. So then I had right. to buy my own.
Right.
It's the old medicine rule from my father. Hey, if one works good, right. two's going to work twice
exactly.
as good.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, our guest, as well as Lori Tine-Brody. It's Physical Therapy Day on The Larry Mueller Show. They're here to answer your questions, help you deal with your aches and pains. And we've got a couple minutes here to do squats. We're already getting ready to do a little snacktivity here. And if you're not behind the wheel, and perhaps if you're listening someplace where you can join us, let's take a couple minutes and get our exercise in. In the meantime, you can also join our conversation, 1-800-642-1234. They're already going. 1-800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. It's WPR News. Never thought I'd go viral for doing squats, but here we are. There should be some video of that for you up on our social media. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and it's Physical Therapy Day, which is why we're doing some snacktivity during our breaks. And our guest, Lori Tine-Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. They're here to answer your PT questions, help deal with your aches and pains, and find out how you are getting by with your best pain relief. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to Susan and Rhinelander next. Susan, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am a very active 70-year-old woman. I've got three dogs. I walk every chance I get. Last calendar year, I walked over 800 miles. And starting in February, I was having aches and pains all over my body, but it was always moving. So I would start a three-mile hike, and my left hip would hurt. And by the end of it, my left hip was fine, but my right hip would hurt. Other times, it's my knee, it's my upper arm, it's my shoulder, it's the end of my neck. I've taken as much as like 9 ibuprofen a day just so I can keep my lifestyle. Any suggestions for me?
Wow.
Yeah.
Just came on suddenly.
In February, though.
Came on in February, and it actually started slow. First it was just like my upper thighs, and then it progressively got worse. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm so sorry. Is it always in your lower extremity, or do you have anything in your upper extremity, Susan?
Oh, I also have it in my upper extremity,
okay.
Across my upper back, sometimes my upper arm.
This is systemic.
And pick an arm. I don't know which day what's going to
okay.
hurt.
Okay. So have you been to your doctor?
I have. And they tested me for Lyme's disease, and I came back just fine. They tested me for lack of vitamin D. They did a whole bunch of stuff. The other thing I did several years ago, I had a breast cancer lump removed, and I had been on anastrozole for over 5 years. And when I contacted the clinic that I used down in Wausau, they say, first off, get off of anastrozole. So I did that, because if you look at the long-term effects of that, it listed everything.
Oh, interesting.
And so I got off of it, and I've been off of it now for probably about a month. But within about 2 weeks, it was like, whoa, my pain is no longer an 8 or a 9. It's down to a 2 or a 3.
Okay, so you do think that this medicine is causative of this, with because you didn't have a mechanism of injury change anything else.
Right.
We looked at each other and thought about Lyme disease for you too, with all the hiking you do.
Right. And I thought about medications, whether there was a change in medications, the addition of a statin, especially if you were starting with thigh pain, which is pretty common with the various statins. But this does sound like it's medication related. So what are they telling you at the clinic? I mean, because a month isn't necessarily long enough for it to have cleared your system.
Oh, absolutely, especially if you've been on it that long.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that it's going to constantly get better. But, like, even this morning I woke up and my upper thighs, the joint, by my hips, really hurt. And I'm taking ibuprofen. Like, I takes three at a crack, and I'm down to about six. So I take it like first thing in the morning and again late in the afternoon.
Okay. Yeah, so trying to wean off of that is going to be good for your body. And I assume when they did those blood tests, they did a bunch of panels looking at inflammation and rheumatology and things like that, looking at your CRP and things like that. So I'm assuming if they did a whole bunch of blood tests that they grabbed that stuff. Because the next step would be seeing a rheumatologist because this is systemic. But it sounds like the medication is the culprit. And I have seen that with various medications in patients where they start taking a medication and they have just a complete, response to it.
Right. So. And if she's been on this medication for years to get it out of your system, I agree with you, Susan. Yeah. I think it's going to take some time. So I think you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
The only other thing I would suggest is, you're tapering down your ibuprofen, which is great. If you can alternate ibuprofen with Tylenol or acetaminophen, I think that would give your system a little bit of a break as well.
Oh, interesting. Because I've got both in my medicine cabinet, and I always wonder, when do I use which? And
well, some people respond better to one or another. Okay. So the Advil or the ibuprofen has an anti-inflammatory effect that Tylenol doesn't have.
Okay,
but they're processed in different locations.
They're processed differently as well.
So alternating may be the best pain relief.
I don't know that it's the best pain relief as much as it's the kindest to your body.
Right.
Okay. From a side effect perspective.
Because it's metabolized differently.
Well, that's good to know.
I probably won't want to do just acetaminophen.
Right.
Okay.
But alternating some would be.
800 miles walking last year.
That's amazing. That's
trying to figure out how far from us that could be. And one of the things that you both mentioned when we were doing our snacktivity is that in given the chance between squatting and walking, you would choose squatting
for muscle strength.
Mm-hmm. For muscle strength.
So that we were, or maybe on a later show, going to talk about this, but they're talking about protein for nutrition and how it's metabolized and utilized in the muscle. And there was a recent study looking at eating food with a high protein diet or just a normal protein diet. The usual dosage, and then they looked at whether people walked for 2 minutes or did 15 squats, and those who did the 15 squats had better uptake and utilization of the protein in their muscle.
So if pain is a little much for the walking, could squatting be a nice replacement for the time
being? Or you could do both.
Right.
Do some squats and then walk for a minute and do a few more squats. It is not dichotomous. It's not a pie.
Right.
So,
Susan, thank you so much, and best of luck. I hope you find some relief with your pain, and keep on walking. Let's go to Corrine in Two Rivers next. Corrine, good morning.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks so much for taking my call. I just really want to give a shout-out to physical therapy. It's an excellent form of care, and I just wanted to share a story that I had regarding a pretty significant left knee pain that began kind of out of the blue, where I got to the point I wasn't as physically active as I am now, but I was still thought I was in pretty good shape. All of a sudden, I had this intense left knee pain, and I couldn't quite figure out where it was coming from. I went to I started trying to do exercises, went to a trainer, went to an orthopedic doctor. I do have a little bit of arthritis in the medial aspect of my left knee, but I'm thinking that's not what it is. It doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so through this big evaluation, what it came down to was that I actually had injured myself probably about 15 years ago and it wasn't really bothering me that much, so I didn't do much. But over time, my body was compensating to where I no longer had the strength in my left gluteus as I did in my right.
Mm.
And that was just torquing my body to the point where finally my knee said, hey, this is wake up. You need some help here. And ultimately then where that led me was to a physical therapist who did dry needling. And it turns out that my muscles were so out of balance that it was just totally torquing my body because of the dysfunction in the muscle mass in my left side and my left gluteus. Mm-hmm. And it's just been an amazing journey of doing 6 weeks of dry needling and each time going in kind of trying to tease out which one was the one we needed to focus on. And ever since then, I've just been gotten back into a really vigorous exercise program and walking and hiking and doing muscle strengthening activities. And it's still not quite where I want it. The glute muscles are still a little weaker, but I can tell it's such a big difference. It's just been amazing.
Good for you.
That's a great story. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people just want, well, you know, tell me what to do. But a lot of times this is why Jill and I recommend that you see a physical therapist, mm-hmm. because, you know, you might go in and say, oh, this is a primary knee problem. And right. we say the physical therapist will examine you from stem to stern. And in this case, the physical therapist found the weakness in the gluteal muscles that, and Jill talked earlier about when we talked about neck pain, about the base. Mm-hmm. Here you're talking about the hips and the gluteal muscles sort of drive the lower extremity posture top down and then the foot from the bottom up. And all those things impact how the knee functions. And so just looking at the knee itself is going to give you an incomplete picture of the real cause of the problem here.
It's the symptom. The knee is the symptom, not the cause.
Right. It's the victim.
It's yeah. the victim.
It's the victim.
Oh, good, Jill.
But I really like how Corrine said, you know, I'd go in and I'd see my therapist and we would discuss, mm-hmm. you know, what the game plan is for this week. So Corrine is an active participant, bringing in information, how these exercises went, how I did with these, and her PT is modifying things according to her input. So it's not that the patient is this passive mm-hmm. participant in the rehab process. You are an active, you know, member of this team, and your input is critical on how we modify things moving forward.
So what does that mean for somebody who has some pain and wants to get it treated? Do you keep a diary of that pain? Do you figure out when it happens, how it happens, and then deliver that to your physical therapist?
Some people mm-hmm. do.
What's the best way to be the best patient?
I think being a good historian is a great question. So I always like to ask questions such as what things make it worse, what things make it better, and we're looking for patterns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you may not, as a consumer, think that this makes sense, but right. for Lori, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Your back is always an extension, and all of those things. Mm-hmm. Or, your hips are always yeah. flexed when you do those patterns. So we're looking for patterning, to see if we can figure something out. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing.
Yeah. Often patients will say, I don't know if this matters.
Right. But that's my favorite line.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it does.
Yes. Yeah. That's my favorite line. I don't know if this is important. I'm like, it probably is. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
those are
very important things that help us kind of fine tune things. And so many times after the first visit, what I'll say is, I want you to pay attention now to mm-hmm. these things, or these are your, lack of better terms, an asterisk sign. So you reported that you had pain with you had knee pain when you sat for more than 30 minutes. Yeah. So we did these interventions. You're going to do these interventions. See if you can now sit for longer. See if your pain is less at the 30-minute mm-hmm. mark, things like that. So the patient should be an active participant in this. That's really important.
And that creates better outcomes for the patient.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Every time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Even if they don't think it has anything to
Correct.
Do with what they're dealing
Correct.
With.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm. I am fascinated with this. And I apologize. We have a bunch of emails. We have a bunch of callers. I wanted to take time for everybody. But we're short on time with the hour here. And we've got some squats to get in before we get started with the news. So what, are you getting tired?
No.
I am.
We're good. We're good.
I know. You're not even breathing heavy, but we're doing our snacktivity during the breaks today for physical therapy with our guests. And it's physical therapy day. So want to give the number out, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll get some emails when we get back from the news. talk@WPR.org. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, our guest for the next 30 minutes. Coming up at 12:30 today, we'll look at the power of massage therapy for a various different number of patients and treatments. So stay tuned for that. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Thank you. It's Physical Therapy Day on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. Thanks for joining us. Our guests, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne Brody, are here to answer your PT questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas or talk at WPR.org. They're with us for the next 30 minutes, so we'll get to as many of you as we can. And we'll start with Brad in Janesville. Brad, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a shoulder that has just been getting progressively stiffer and more painful over time. I used to sleep wonderfully in my bed, either with a partner or using a pillow and a body pillow and a side posture. But now that my shoulder is stiffening up and it's painful, I can't sleep on my right side. I can't sleep on my left side. I've resorted to sleeping leaning way back in a recliner,
the Barco lounger. Yeah.
Yep. Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. And we hear this a lot.
My orthopedist who did my knees imaged my shoulder and said, you've got mild arthritis. We're not going to do surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, am I just stuck in the recliner? Can I ever go back to laying down on my side in a bed?
So have you lost motion in your shoulder? Can you lift all the way overhead, reach behind your back to get your wallet out of your pocket?
I have. It's real stiff. I have limited mobility in that right shoulder. I can't reach up over my head very well.
Mm-hmm.
I can strain to reach around to my back pocket.
Okay.
It's time for therapy,
it's
Brad.
It's time for PT. It sounds like you're developing an adhesive capsulitis.
Well, that
potentially.
And just if he's got some OA there, it could be a little bit of arthritic changes, but he needs his motion.
Mm-hmm.
That'll
help. You got to have motion.
Yeah. That joint's just going to get stiff and uncomfortable. Night pain is classic with rotator cuff pathology, so you may have just a little bit of overuse of your rotator cuff.
But in any case, this is not going to get better on its own.
No.
It would have gotten better by now.
Right.
So you need to see a physical therapist who will examine you and see which directions you've lost motion in, test your strength, bunch of things, and get you going. But you need to get into PT. This is not, you're not going to wake up with a shoulder feeling good. Jill's scrunching her forehead.
Right. I'm just thinking about the sleeping position. So a couple things. I mean, most people like
I'd stay in the recliner.
Yeah, most people like the loose back position. They like their arm in that certain position, which will help. But if your shoulder gets more mobility, et cetera, you should be able to get back in your bed.
Right, right. But what's most important right now is that you sleep well, because that's really important for healing.
Right.
So you need to get a good night's sleep. And if that requires a recliner, okay, but get into PT.
You know what's worse than somebody with shoulder pain?
What?
Somebody with shoulder pain who's crabby because they aren't sleeping.
Oh!
It's really miserable.
It
is miserable. They don't get good sleep at night.
Yeah.
They don't get...
Mm-hmm.
Their body doesn't restore things. Mm-hmm.
Yep. They're in pain.
They're in pain. Mm-hmm. And it is tough. And you see this a lot in patients.
Yeah, it's also understandable. You're
absolutely
not sleeping, you're in pain, you're miserable.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you need to get into PT as soon as possible, Brad, and get this going.
Yeah.
Brad, I'm glad you called. Rick and Kakana, we'll go to you next. Good afternoon.
Yes, I've been having some pain in my ribs about a third the way up from the bottom on the left side. I found out that my seat in my work truck is a little bit crooked, so I got to adjust that. But it's just sore all the time, and I had some similar low back pain. And when I kind of fix that by just when I wake up in the morning, I lay flat in bed, and I rotate one hip down, and I rotate the other one up. I do that back and forth like about 100 times, and that's kind of took care of my low back pain. I was just wondering if there's something like that I could be doing for my rib.
Well, the low back pain and the rib pain, it's a good chance that they are associated.
Mm-hmm. And the lower third of your rib cage.
Mm-hmm. Lower third of your rib cage, yes. So maybe it's related to your posture in the truck. And if that's the case, that needs to get fixed as the causative factor. But again, this is a case where it's enough of a no man's land between the back and the ribs that you would benefit from a visit to a physical therapist to sort through what the relationship is. Is it because of your posture? Do you have a little scoliosis potentially that's causing some rib pain? So that's a little bit of a rotation in your lumbar spine and some
curvature in your spine. And sometimes that can create rib pain because your ribs attach to your spine. So there's enough of options here and unknown variables as to the causative factor that a visit or two with the physical therapist might help you sort that out. They can give you a couple exercises to do, like the ones that you do in the morning that relieve your back pain,
right?
That will also relieve your rib pain.
Right.
But I can't tell you what those are because there's too many unknowns.
Right.
Rick, thank you for the call and best of luck finding some relief there. Let's turn now to emails from the email inbox talk at WPR.org. We'll start with Mary, who's healthy and 60 years old. She started a women's weight training at class 5 weeks ago. It meets twice a week. The class does resistance training, floor exercises, and lifting with hand weights. She uses 8 to 10 pound weights as directed so that the difficulty increases with repetitions. But a week into the class, Mary started feeling a light tingling in the fingers of both hands and wants to know if this may be related to the weight training and should she be doing something differently.
It's more than likely coming from Mary's neck. She's the perfect age demographic. Mm-hmm. And if it's bilateral in both hands, I mean, I think a carpal tunnel, but I think before I would think carpal tunnel, I would think something coming from her neck. So the question is she putting her neck in a weird position when she's doing these exercises? So is she shearing her neck forward or if she's putting a bar in her back, is she doing something with her cervical spine? So my best guess is it's coming from her neck.
I would guess so too. And I would, if I had to pick something, I would start if she's doing anything overhead with both arms, like an overhead shoulder press, I would probably discontinue that right now. And I would go to the instructor of that class and explain what's happening and have the instructor watch her do her exercises and ensure that her neck is in an appropriate posture and that the resistance is the appropriate amount.
Right. So that's it. She's all well-intended here doing this resistance training class, and we want to keep her in there as much as possible.
We do not want you to stop that.
Right.
Mary, thank you for the email. Jim emailed to say that he saw an article recently related to grip strength and longevity. The greater the grip strength, the higher correlation to increased longevity. And it made Jim curious. He went on eBay and bought a dynamometer.
Grip dynamometer, sure.
Any thoughts on this?
So it's funny that you say this because in massive strength studies, what many researchers will do is they will forego looking at all other strength and they'll just look at grip strength.
Why?
And because it traditionally has been very indicative of your overall body strength.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of falling out of favor.
Oh.
So it's not as
instead
highly
of this being a new article that Jim just found.
Well, this was about longevity, though, not necessarily strength.
Right.
So I don't know that much about longevity.
I still think they're using strength as a marker for longevity, and they're looking at a correlation. So.
But a better indicator might be overall strength.
Well, we don't know. So is somebody having good grip strength a marker for other things that they do? They're regular exercisers. They might lift weights. They might be active in the garden where they're using their hands a lot. So they're not people who are sitting, you know, on their phones or driving a TV remote. They're doing something that's keeping or in a chair doing a grip thing.
Doing a grip dynamometer, Jim is doing. So sitting in your chair and doing a grip dynamometer is not going to increase your longevity.
You may want to put that back up on eBay, Jim. Melissa emailed to say at 50 years old, working from home, sitting for her job, has seen a power pedaler machine that goes under the desks and moves legs in a bicycle motion. Do these really help? Melissa's worked from home for 3 years and feels more tired than ever now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, getting that blood flow, that circulation going is great. So what we had talked about earlier, you know, standing desk, walking things, this just gets in that category of changing position, increasing blood flow, increasing circulation. So if she's, you know, married to that sitting for a prolonged period of time, this would be an option that would help her.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's better than just standing.
Absolutely.
Because it's moving and it's increasing circulation. It's moving things through the system rather than just standing.
But before you get the pedals, you can also just get up and do some squats.
You could.
If you're able to do that.
But some people can pedal concurrently while they're working on their computer. So that's the beauty of these things.
You know, for me,
I think way better
on
when
a bike.
I'm moving.
On a
when
bike.
I'm moving.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Blood flow gets all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a physiological aspect
Absolutely.
To it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not just psychological. Nancy emailed to say they have dull neck aches that emanates from under their shoulder blades, runs up only their right side, and has caused headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy uses a laptop, generally has excellent posture, moves around a lot. Acupuncture has been wonderful for mm-hmm. general well-being, but it doesn't seem to reduce the shoulder neck issue. Nancy also sees a chiropractor, which has helped, but regular visits seem to be required to get some relief. Is this a situation for a Medicare physical therapy referral?
So my best guess is it sounds like it could very well be her upper trap. Mm-hmm. So upper trap refer, it, the pattern she talks about is makes total sense. An upper trap can be causative for headaches, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We can get something called a ram's horn where it kind of comes around the back of your head and ends up right behind your eye. There's a common trigger point in the upper trap for that. So if she's using her computer a lot and she's right-handed, I don't know where her mouse is, but if she's mousing off to the side, that could be a factor.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like she's doing a good job taking care of herself, but she should see a physical therapist for an ergonomic assessment.
Right.
I think laptops are such a problem child. So the first thing I almost, because if the keyboard's in the right spot, then the screen isn't. And if the screen's in the right spot, then the keyboard is not. So what I recommend is typically buying a silicone screen, a keyboard.
Yeah.
One of those roll-up keyboards.
Yeah.
And then put your monitor at the appropriate eye level and then use a little separate keyboard. If you can.
Problem with laptops is if the screen's in the right place, the keyboard isn't. And if the keyboard's in the right place, the screen isn't.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a detachable screen.
Right.
Or a detachable keyboard.
Oh, man. So. Paula in Amherst Junction has a question. Sounds a little bit similar to Rick in his car. Paula does volunteer driving for the disabled and elderly, is in the car quite a lot, and beyond just walking in between stops, wants to know if there's any ideas for how to ergonomically arrange the driver's seat while Paula is on the road. A bolster pillow for the lumbar area, is that something? Paula's looking for any other ideas you might have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lumbar roll is a good thing.
Okay.
And making sure your seat is adjusted, you know, to keep you in good posture so you're not slouching. What Jill often says is you get in the car and you get in your very best posture and then you adjust your mirrors to that position so that when you look in your mirror and you see that it's not right where it should be, you know you're not in correct posture. You want to make sure you're not stretching your right leg too far for the gas pedal or brake because it can give you a little bit of sciatica.
Mm.
So that's another issue. If you're having issues with sitting on your tush and having some butt pain, you can take a couple towel rolls and roll them up the long way underneath your thighs to take the pressure off your butt. So those are another couple other options.
Right. And for the lumbar roll, I wouldn't purchase one. I would just roll up some towels.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
You can see thickness, what works for you, firmness, things like
that. And then duct tape it.
And duct tape it together. Mm-hmm.
I just had an aha moment where I adjusting the rearview mirror and wondering who's been driving my car.
Yeah.
But that's just me slouching or sitting up straight.
Just
I don't
slouching.
Know.
Yep. One of the two. Yep.
So I need to find a good posture in my car, set my windows, and then mirrors. And the next time I get in, if my mirrors have changed, it's not because somebody's been driving my car.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I'm slouching.
Right. Well, if you slouch over time while you're driving and you go to look in your rearview mirror, it's a reminder that you need to sit up that just that little half inch.
I'm learning so much. Let's get back to your calls at 1-800-642-1234 with our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Fran and Spooner, we'll go to you next. Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon. I was just calling. I had a total knee replacement last November, so I'm 6 months post-op. 60 years old, tennis player, walking a lot, very active person. Anyway, trying to get back to that. I initially had a lot of difficulty getting my quad to engage, and PT, I had to switch PTs, and then they said I was a little late getting on the EMS, you know, to get it to fire when I was doing, like, my straight leg raise.
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm able to walk now probably 4 miles, five, I'm up to about that, but and only played, hit a couple times on the tennis court. Anyway, point is, I just wonder if I'm behind schedule or ahead. I know there isn't, it's a gray area there, but
I think
still icing every night seems weird. Like I'm having to elevate ice at the end of a day, you know, and I'm like, and I know I'm still not, my quad's not built up to where it needs, and I'm still in PT once a week.
So. This was November?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So she's 6 months out. I think she's doing great.
Yep, you're doing fine.
I mean, 4 to 5 miles and mm-hmm. doing some frontal plane movement on a tennis court.
Yep.
The icing business, mm-hmm. Fran, is, you know, you're putting a lot of demand on that knee. So you're walking 4 to 5 miles is a demand on that knee. So the fact that your body's like, you know what, I need something at the end of the day to kind of simmer it back down is completely mm-hmm. appropriate. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you sound great.
Yep.
Yeah, keep plugging on the quad though.
Yeah.
That's really important.
And you know, one of the things that we see is that people can sometimes fire their quads when we put the EMS on or when we're in clinic and the PT is tapping or doing whatever we do to get you to activate your quad, but sometimes people aren't actually using it when they're doing that functional activity. So it's really important that when you're hiking, you are being really cognizant of firing your quads every time you take a step.
Keep up the work, Fran, and thank you for calling. Another question about knee pain when we go to Amy in Appleton next. Amy, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I started with some knee pain about 10 years, or I shouldn't say knee pain. I had behind my knees, I had some, what I believe was Baker's cyst. I saw a specialist, and he said as long as there was no pain, just keep on it.
Yep.
So I haven't done anything. That started with walking long distances with another person whose stride was longer than mine, so I was wondering if I was overextending my knees.
Mm-hmm. Could have been.
So now I'm having some pain also with the swelling behind my knees. What makes it feel better is good supportive shoes or ice.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, I've been trying to focus on 30 minutes of exercise each day, things like biking, or I started also some weights.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
That's what inner and outer thighs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So how is this working for you now?
I started it in May, mm-hmm. and I'm still, you know, if I do feel pain, when I do feel pain, I back off of it a little bit. But I do try to get in the 30 minutes of exercise each day.
It's great. I hear you say that you're doing some strengthening for the outside and inside. Are you doing something for your quadriceps? That's probably your quadriceps and your hamstrings are probably the two that you really need to make sure that you include in this.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, I'd say behind the leg and inner and outer, not probably for the quad.
Okay.
Okay.
I would try to find a way that you can do some quadriceps strengthening for that particular muscle. So the Baker's cyst is simply a manifestation of irritation inside your knee joint. And so by doing these strengthening exercises, what you're doing is you're giving your body another avenue to absorb load and absorb shock. So the muscles will absorb the load instead of going through the joint. You already said that wearing good shoes is helpful. Mm-hmm. So all of this tells me that you need, you're talking about shock absorption, something mm-hmm. else to offload the knee joint itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
don't you're thinking?
I agree. Yeah. So the muscle strengthening is going to be key. So really working all four sides, front, back, in, out.
And your butt.
Yeah, your glutes.
Your glutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe you need to see a PT for one or two visits and get the right exercises for you and make sure you're doing them correctly.
Right.
Because if you do them wrong, it can annoy your knee.
Right. Like you said, you had to step back mm-hmm. and things like that. So let's make sure that we can keep you on an upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. Kudos to you for dedicating time to do this. That's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah. What constitutes good shoes?
Whatever works for you.
It depends upon the person.
Right.
Yeah. There's no.
Because I'm seeing shoes now with foam padding to be like.
I know.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of different brands out there, and there's minimalist shoes and this mm-hmm. and that and everything. And most of the research related to running will tell you that it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't. Yeah. The shoe that's comfortable for you is the right shoe to wear.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Speaking of feet, let's go to Roger in Grantsburg next. Roger, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi, gals. How are you doing?
Great, Roger.
I have an issue. I'm the guy that called you before with the broken heel on the Kiss shoes in 1976. And the screwed up when I messed up my ankle. But I've got plantar fasciitis in that foot. I had a shot in my heel about 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. It took care of the pain in my heel, but the arch of my foot is just on fire. It's like to step on anything, it's like the bottom. Plus, I get swelled up. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to ice it and doing whatever. And then I took a water bottle and I was rolling mm-hmm. it
yes.
in the arch of my foot, trying to get to relieve the pain. It went down somewhat, but I was reading that you could do like different stretching exercises to help alleviate some of the pain. And I was wondering what that procedure that would be.
So there are plantar fascia specific stretches. So if you think about taking your leg and crossing your ankle over your knee, and then you take your hand and you bend your toes up. So that is a plantar fascia stretch. I also show people one at a step, but really you want to bend your toes up and flex your ankle at the same time. So, and I assume with your water bottle, you're freezing that.
I had frozen, yes, and that felt, oh God, that felt awesome.
Yeah, okay, right. All right, yeah. So that's one thing. And then have you tried a night splint?
No, I haven't. I hadn't researched that.
Okay, so I have no investment in this, but my favorite is a Darko, Darco, and I like it because it's a night splint that goes on top of your foot and top of your ankle instead of behind it, because I think people with plantar fasciitis and heel pain think it's painful to have something pressing against your heel and the bottom of your foot all night long. The Darco goes on top, so that's my personal favorite there. And have you followed up with your physician?
Well, and seen a physical therapist.
Yeah.
We've been talking about his physician got him this injection mm-hmm. and all that. So have you, A, followed up with your physician, and B, have you seen a PT?
I haven't seen PT, but yes, I have. I've got an appointment coming up here in probably 2 weeks.
Okay, great. I think if you're not turning the corner, mm-hmm. you should definitely see a therapist to get very specific exercises for you, Roger, because mm-hmm. you have an extensive history.
Yeah.
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 Thank you for the call, Roger, and let's end our conversation this afternoon the same way we began it this Uh-oh. Morning with a look
Squats?
At neck pain. Oh, no. Yeah, no, we'll get to those too momentarily. Hold on. But Caitlin emailed to say at 28 years old, she's got migraines accompanied almost always with neck and shoulder pain, constant tightness in Caitlin's upper shoulders and lower neck, and wondering about physical therapy and its ability to help.
There are physical therapists that specialize in neck pain, cervical pain, and headaches. So mm-hmm. She should probably see an orthopedic clinical specialist,
mm-hmm. okay.
somebody who's an OCS, that can help her with that. But it could be musculature in origin, things like that. So she should definitely see someone.
So some dry needling.
Yep.
But there are people who specialize, called cervicogenic headaches.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cervicogenic headaches.
So the headaches related mm-hmm. to your cervical spine or coming from your cervical spine.
And it certainly seems that Caitlin thinks that might be the case.
Sounds like, right.
Find a specialist, and our specialist today, I can't thank you enough for spending the time with us and showing me the different things about laptops and rear view mirrors and just getting up and moving around during our underwriter breaks.
Our pleasure.
Jill Tine
Nissenbaum,
Lori Tine Brody, thank you both so much and look forward to having you back with Larry next time. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller. When we continue, we take a look at the power of massage therapy and how it can treat any number of different patients and help them in their recovery. This is WPR News. What do you think about getting a massage? Do you think it's just a luxury? For many, it's becoming an integrative part of treatment and recovery. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today, and our next guest is Scott Feist. He's an integrative medicine manager for Aurora Healthcare. I want to know about how massage therapy has helped you at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org and let us know how massage has been integrated into your healing and your recovery and what you think of the results. Scott Feist, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thanks so much, Lee. A longtime fan of the program and first-time guest.
Hey,
happy to be here and talk to your listeners.
Grateful to have you. So let's begin with a little bit of what it means to be an integrative medicine manager and a little bit of the look at the work you do at Aurora Healthcare, Scott.
Sure. Yeah, I've been with the Division of Integrative Medicine for Aurora Healthcare for over 20 years now. I have been a licensed massage therapist for nearly 25 years now. Started out in Chicago and then moved to the Milwaukee area. But in the past 20 years, I've really worked to integrate integrative therapies and programs like massage therapy and acupuncture and health coaching into the traditional healthcare setting. So that's much of what I do now. My role has evolved, and I'm almost entirely administrative, but maintain my massage therapy license and work closely with others on our team that lead the programs.
How have you seen Western medicine evolve over that time, Scott, to begin to understand the value of things like acupuncture and massage therapy?
Sure. Yeah. Well, one thing that we have done over my entire career is really try to educate people. A long time ago, 10, 15 years ago, we've had programs within Aurora Healthcare for over 20 years. And people that work with us used to often say, I didn't even know we had massage therapy or acupuncture. We don't hear that so much anymore. It's very rare. So that lets us know that we're doing our job at educating people, getting the word out, and expanding our programming within the system and throughout the footprint and into Illinois as well. So it's exciting work. I have said for a long time that we feel like we're, blazing trails, but been at it a long time, and it's much more commonplace now, much more accepted, a lot more people know about it, and a lot more people take advantage of the services.
And Scott, I would imagine one of the reasons for that is the results that massage therapy gets. What do you see as a result of integrating massage therapy into a part of somebody's recovery?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, massage therapy has gotten a lot more credibility, if you will, a lot more respect because so many people have experienced the positive impacts of it. And it can be rather immediate. If someone comes in with a headache, they can get immediate relief from that, or other pains or stiffness. So, it runs a gamut. And there's a lot that we can do, and the demand has increased, and especially we've had a lot of growth with particular patient populations, like working with patients that have cancer, and we have programs embedded right in those cancer clinics, and those are some of the people that, can really benefit. Really, I think anyone can benefit from some sort of massage therapy and body work.
Sure, but tell us a little bit more about how cancer patients benefit from massage therapy, Scott. That's fascinating.
Yeah, so we started up a program over 15 years ago. It first started at St. Luke's Medical Center in Milwaukee, where we were asked to provide massage therapy to patients on the inpatient unit. And then it expanded to starting programs in the outpatient cancer clinics. So we can provide massage therapy to cancer patients as they're receiving their chemotherapy infusion.
Oh.
And so that can be a long process. Patients can be in a chair for several hours receiving chemotherapy. It really varies depending on the treatment that they're receiving. But we can provide some relief from some of the stress that they're experiencing, some of the tension, maybe if it's even just to help provide some sort of distraction and help pass the time. But we get really great positive feedback and real help with the symptoms of cancer treatments, addressing pain, fatigue, nausea, helping improve sleep patterns, things like that.
So how is the integrated massage therapy at Aurora Healthcare? How would that be different than, say, just going to get a massage at a retreat or at a spa?
Yeah, it really comes down to the therapist that you're working with and the training that they've had and the experience that they have. Within our system, we have rather rigorous competencies, if you will. We train the massage therapists that work with different types of patients. And a lot of times in working with special populations like cancer patients or expectant mothers, it's more rather than the techniques that you use, it's oftentimes more what not to do, what the therapist is aware needs to be aware of so that they can provide safe massage techniques.
What got Scott Feist going down this road more than a quarter century ago? How did you get involved with this, starting with your massage license and now becoming the integrative medicine manager for Aurora Healthcare?
That's a great question. I'll try to keep the story somewhat short, but I was living in Chicago about 25 years ago and worked in retail management. I am actually a native of Minnesota, grew up in Minneapolis, and went to the University of Minnesota, relocated to Chicago, worked in retail management, really got burnt out on that. And I'd always had an interest in healthcare. So I met a massage therapist and got a fantastic treatment and started talking to that person about their practice and how rewarding it was, the training that they received. They were into very specific techniques, neuromuscular massage therapy, more of a therapeutic type massage rather than relaxation massage. And that was really intriguing to me. So lo and behold, I quit my job in retail management. I learned that there was one of the top two or three massage schools in the nation was a couple miles from where I lived. So I enrolled, and I became a full-time massage therapist right after that, when I finished that program. And as I said, I ended up moving to Milwaukee and got a job with Aurora Healthcare, initially as supervisor of massage therapy services. And then with my background in management, my role, like I said, has evolved over the years.
So you basically got a massage and had a life-changing event as a result. I mean,
it really was. Yeah.
I love that story.
It was a pretty profound experience. It was actually a pair that had been visiting a friend of mine in Chicago, and they were there for some education. And one of them was a Reiki practitioner and had just purchased recently it was a Native American drum. So as I was receiving this massage, the other person was slowly beating this drum, and the vibrations were going through me, really. And it was a pretty profound experience.
Yeah, it sounds like almost a spiritual as much as physical, Scott.
Well, yeah, and in our world, in integrative medicine or whole health, we really try to look at the mind, body, and spirit. They all work together, and they don't each exist in a vacuum. So,
yeah,
absolutely,
like our mind and our body and spirit all exist within ourselves. And you mentioned Reiki as part of your life-changing experience, but does Aurora Healthcare offer Reiki as part of integrative medicine?
It does. Most of our massage therapists have training in Reiki as well. So for people that are looking specifically for Reiki services, those are available. Oftentimes, though, as massage therapists are working, they inherently incorporate some level of Reiki, or, you know, there's an energy exchange, even the heat in the body, you know, that's an energy exchange. So it's integrated.
Sure.
Term is used a lot.
Explain Reiki for me, if you would.
Reiki is really working with the body's energy systems to try to regulate them and calm them, to really enhance the parasympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is the flight or fight mode. And in today's society, so many of us are in that fight or flight mode right, all too often. So we really want to nurture the parasympathetic nervous system, which helps keep us calm and helps our body rest and repair. So sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but stimulating the parasympathetic nervous system is really helping to relax the nervous system.
No, if it takes away from that fight or flight impending sense that can sometimes encroach all too often, I could understand where it would provide some peace of mind. Have an email here, Scott, from Jane, who says that they've been getting massage therapy through the UW Eastside Madison Clinic for over 2 years now. Jane has chronic pain resulting from a car accident, and the therapy helps immensely with that pain. She highly recommends it. Is this something you've seen, people who are recovering from accidents and injury finding relief through massage?
Indeed, yes. And I know, you know, I've heard your previous guests before in the past, and physical therapy is great. Massage therapy is really great for chronic pain to help manage that. Maybe a little bit less so for acute pain, like after a traumatic injury. You may not want to get massage therapy right away, but as you're going through the recovery process and your tissue is recovering and you want to help manage scar tissue and flexibility, massage is really great for that.
Yeah, what's really going on?
It can provide a lot of relief.
Yeah, so when you start to get into those muscles, what's happening? What are you doing? Explain a little bit of the physiology of what's happening to my body when it's getting a massage.
Okay, well, don't want to get too technical, but one of the key players in the anatomy is your fascia, right? So that is the connective tissue that surrounds muscle spindles, like individual muscle fibers and muscles and muscle groups. So there are many layers of fascia, and sometimes those fascia and other cells can have sorts of adhesions and not be so smooth working together and with each other and not as flexible. So massage therapy can help increase circulation, break up some of that fascial adhesion, help lengthen muscle tissue, and like I said, increase blood flow and help the tissue recover more quickly.
Do you have to be an Aurora Health patient to book a massage at one of your clinics, Scott?
No, you do not have to be a current patient of Aurora Healthcare to book. So I encourage people to go to our website at www.aurora.org. And you can do a keyword search for massage therapy there or integrative medicine and check out all of the services that we offer and where they're available.
Do you have to have some sort of precondition in order to get treatment?
No, not at all. You can come and get a massage at Aurora for any reason, just like you would anywhere else you could get massage therapy. So you can just book appointment. It can be for relaxation or stress reduction, or it can be for something more specific, like to recover from an injury or a procedure, or even help prepare for a procedure. Or sports massage can help prepare athletes for an upcoming event or recover after an event.
Oh,
well,
interesting that it can be used not just for recovery, but in the lead up to some sort of medical procedure.
Yes, it can. Yeah, it can help increase flexibility. And even from the, you know, when you're preparing for an event, you're working out and you're taxing your muscle tissue, and massage therapy can help increase that blood circulation and help the tissue recover quickly.
So preparation, medical recovery, what about prevention, Scott?
Yeah, well, just keeping the blood circulating and keeping the body more flexible, working to eliminate or reduce tense muscles, mm-hmm. all of that can help people maintain a healthier lifestyle. And there is that mind-body connection too. Getting body work can help people just feel generally better about themselves, understand their own body a little bit better. That's one of the nice things about working with a good massage therapist. If you're interested, if you do want to talk about what's going on, massage therapists can explain a little bit of that anatomy and physiology and help people understand their own bodies a little bit better.
I think that's my biggest takeaway from getting a massage is how mentally relaxed I feel afterwards. Sure, my body's been, you know, calmed or rubbed down, but it's whatever's happening inside my head that I walk away from that I'm left thinking about when it comes to a massage, Scott. And I find that a little bit interesting because wouldn't necessarily think of that physical experience as having such a mental result.
Yeah, it can really help reset the mind and, you know, kind of give yourself a little bit of hope. Oh, yeah, I can. helps you remember that you can feel that good if you are experiencing pain or stiffness. So it's good to get that little reminder. And again, like I said, you know, we spend too much time in fight or flight mode, and helping to battle that and help the body and mind to calm down is really invaluable. Stress can exacerbate any physical condition that anyone is experiencing. So to help manage that can help manage that condition as well.
Scott Feist, our guest, integrative medicine manager for Aurora Healthcare, taking a look at the healing power, preventative power of massage therapy. And if you've had experiences or you've got questions for Scott, we invite you to our conversation, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or talk at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News. Taking a look at the healing power of massage therapy with our guest, Scott Feist, integrative medicine manager for Aurora Healthcare. Reminder, tomorrow on the show, we'll take a look at your must reads for the summer. Daniel Golden returns, the owner of the Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and we'll also invite you to add your books to our summer must read list. But right now, do you have questions about massage therapy, how it works, and what you can do to feel better, both in mind, body, and spirit? 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Joe in Jefferson. Joe, good afternoon.
Hi, Lee. Just congratulate you first on doing a great job sitting in for Larry. Those big shoes to fill.
Yes, indeed. And thank you so much, man.
Yeah. I love WPR. I tell my friends to listen out of state on the app and or on the website, but love this channel and been supporting for years. But my question was with massage. I'm pretty much sure the answer is going to be no, but if insurance covers it. And also for people that are a little bit hesitant to get massage, maybe because the undressing, can you kind of address that, like how people can maybe not have to fully unclothe or, you know, things like that to make you feel more comfortable?
Joe, thank you very much. They are two great questions, both of which I've had to wonder at times. And Scott, thanks for handling for us. Let's start with getting insurance to cover massage.
Yeah, Joe, those are great questions and very common. You're pretty much right. Very rarely is massage therapy covered by insurance. Oftentimes, people can use flexible spending account dollars or health savings account dollars to pay for massage therapy if they have a letter of medical necessity or a sort of prescription from their physician or a primary care clinician, or it could be from a chiropractor. So in those cases, you can use those tax-free dollars to pay for massage therapy. We are starting to see some emerging coverage under Medicare Advantage plans. So some Medicare Advantage plans do have a benefit for massage therapy as well. So it's really encouraging to see.
Now, when it comes to various stages of undress and people's comfort with their own bodies, how do you deal with that in massage therapy, Scott?
Sure. Yeah, we understand that. Everyone's different and everyone has a different level of comfort with their own body and with disrobing. So we're very sensitive to that. And it is, you know, kind of daunting if you think about it. If, you know, you're going to see somebody and it may be a stranger and you're, you know, sometimes expected to take your clothing off. It's really not necessary to take clothing off. Sometimes, the techniques that are used are a little bit limited if there is clothing, but a good massage therapist should be able to provide a really good treatment, even if the person is fully clothed. So it's really entirely up to the comfort level of the individual. Yeah. So yeah, you're alone, one-on-one in a room with someone. And you want to get to know the massage therapist. I always encourage someone to ask questions of the massage therapist before they get started with them, even before they book an appointment. You know, you want to know about their training. Where they were trained is a good question. If they're a member of a professional association, if they've had any continuing education, how long they've been practicing. In the state of Wisconsin, all massage therapists are licensed by the state. So you want to make sure that they're licensed. And so it's really up to your level of comfort, the individual, so how much clothing they want to take off. Massage therapist, there are laws. So by law, massage therapists have to keep all private parts covered at all times. So there are different draping techniques with the sheets to ensure that all intimate areas, if you will, are covered at all times.
But your comfort is paramount as a client. So whatever you're most comfortable with is the best way to go forward, at least most of the time.
That's right. And yeah. by law, all massage therapists should make it very clear that anyone receiving a massage can ask for the treatment to be stopped at any point mm-hmm. or techniques to be adjusted to their comfort level. So oftentimes, you know, people getting a massage think, oh, you're the expert. You do what you think. But that's really not the case. It's open communication is really key between the massage therapist and the person that's receiving the massage. That communication helps tailor the treatment specifically for the preferences of the person and to help get the most out of the treatment. So open communication is key. And if you're getting a massage and you're not feeling comfortable, it's important to let that therapist know right away. So whatever can be adjusted, or even if you just want to stop the treatment, you shouldn't feel any pressure at all.
Great questions, Joe, and thanks for asking them. Scott, what kind of different massage therapies does Aurora Health offer?
Sure. Well, of course, we offer a basic Swedish massage, which is more of a relaxation-type massage to help increase circulation. If you look at our website, there are a number of different techniques listed on there. But sports massage, as I said, can help prepare muscles in the body before an event or help recover afterward. There are massage techniques that are a little more intense, like neuromuscular massage therapy, working with specific trigger points to alleviate those. And massage therapy works really well in conjunction with other therapies like physical therapy or chiropractic or acupuncture. Again, getting back to that whole person health model, where not any one thing is necessarily going to be the cure for whatever it is, but a combination of different things really works well and it empowers the individual too to make some choices about their health care and how they're addressing their issues.
How do I figure out which one's the best for me?
Really, just talking to the massage therapist. It depends on sure. what the individual goals are. If you just want a nice relaxing massage to help reduce stress, something like Swedish massage might be good. If you want something more therapeutic to work on a specific sore muscle or sore muscle group, or a lot of people are familiar with those trigger points, those hot spots, there are specific massage techniques that can help alleviate those in short periods of time.
Now,
or even, you know, after recovering from a surgical procedure where there's scar tissue, you know, given a little bit of time for the acute recovery stage, then massage therapy, when it comes into the more subacute or chronic phase, to start to work with that scar tissue and loosen up some of those adhesions.
Now, we've focused a lot on massage therapy here, but as integrative medicine manager for Aurora Healthcare, Scott, what are some of the other integrative medicines that are used with Aurora?
Sure. I've mentioned a number of them already, like acupuncture, health coaching. There are some techniques, some aromatherapy techniques that are used in hospital settings now. Our system has a policy for the use of aromatherapy, and there are a specific limited number of essential oils that can be used even in hospital settings that are available. So we do a whole lot really with the idea that we're treating the whole body, right? That whole person care or whole health. So that's really the overlooming umbrella. So a lot of these things do work very well together, like chiropractic as well.
No, yeah.
So they really complement each other well.
Got an email here from Kathy, whose dad is 90 years old, has peripheral neuropathy in his legs. At this point, he cannot feel his feet at all, but his legs are pretty numb from his thighs down. Wants to know if massage therapy might help in mobility and balance and bringing back some feeling.
Possibly. We do have a little bit of evidence, particularly in the work that we do with cancer patients, that peripheral neuropathy is a rather common condition. And we have seen some good results and documented them, that some people may get a little bit of feeling back. There may be a little bit of comfort for that numbness or tingling that people with neuropathy feel, a little bit of alleviation of that. Nothing real dramatic, but it can help increase the circulation, and in conjunction with other therapies and perhaps physical therapy as well.
Scott, I'm afraid we're out of time, but we'll have to find some more time for you and have you join us again. Thanks so much for joining us today. Scott Feist, Integrative Medicine Manager for Aurora Healthcare. Thanks for listening. And all our shows here, a team effort, obviously. Clara Neipert, Joe Patenaude, our producers. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller.